A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I know I'll get hate for this. He is so shit. He's like, he's on another planet.
But
all the time.
It's showtime, folks.
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg. He's ready. Oh, hell yeah!
It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
The Cold Hollywood Classic Nitro Review. Look at that. You know, when it's peaking, don't come a sneaking. It's Tom Campbell for the Cold Hollywood Classic Nitro Review, joined by WCW boy Sam Driver.
Hello, how you doing? We are coming in quite hot there. Is that all right?
I'm hot to trot.
I think I'm a bit quieter than you in the mix.
I'm always quiet,
yeah.
Me.
We should... There we go. We should be kind of on the level.
It'll be fine.
So long as we're not seeing any red. Sorry, headphone users.
It has been a hot minute.
It has.
Since we did one of these.
Fuck me. We were supposed to get straight in and we had a whole plan. It was like, we'll shoot a few of them. We'll shoot a few of them every week.
And we did, to be fair.
And we did. And then I went and got fucking COVID. Got COVID, was off work. Just 2 straight weeks we couldn't do anything, and then come back, and then Rumble build up, and then Rumble, and now finally,
and back in the office because there was a little period of time where we all went home again.
Oh God, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, restrictions, and now national insurance is going up because you know they're not paying for it, so it's on us.
Is that the news today? The national insurance contributions?
No, it's been on the news for quite some time, but it just seems to be that the exact amount that was written off by that grubby government to all of their grubby little shitty cunty mates.
Politics banter.
Yeah, it just so happens to be like just about the same amount as a national insurance hike for a year.
Ooh, isn't that interesting?
But you know,
works.
Fuck us, right? You know, climbing energy prices, climbing broadband prices. But no, let's vote again for another fucking decade of shit.
It's good to be back.
It's good to be British, isn't it? Yeah.
It's better to be...
It's like, oh, and just one more thing before we start.
You take your time, pal.
All these people who are like, oh, yeah, well, we're a great nation. It's like, we were a great nation. We fought World War fucking II. We helped defeat the Nazis. And now, you know, you get locked in the house. Yes, it sucks, but it's not, oh, my God. It's not even comparable. Just, yeah.
You got an issue, Sam.
Too much
you should
Twitter.
Come out and
Too
say
much
it.
Twitter is what my issue is.
You got to get off that Twitter.
I try, and then you just get sucked into the trending tab because it knows that I'm just like, fucking Tory. God.
Gotta get off
and
that
it just,
Twitter.
Yeah, it just boils my brain.
When I was off for the week, I actually deleted Twitter from my phone.
I took, I think, a good week off last time. I had some time off, but it was nice. But then just came barreling hard back into it.
On the plus side, since we've last got together, I fell down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, you did.
That's exciting.
I left on your birthday drinks.
Which was lovely, by the way.
I came in this morning. I'm glad you had fun.
I had a lovely time.
We found out about it in secret and everything. We've been trying to just like kind of secretly go away. And then, yeah, you turned up. You didn't know anything about it. It was grand.
It was amazing.
And then we went from, one bar to the next. And then I left. And then you went to another. And I came in this morning. First time I've seen you since. Was how you doing? And what did you tell me?
I said, I fell down a flight of stairs. And I completely knackered my leg. It was the last pub. I blame Jack and Dick Tubbs. Young Jamie. We were the final three on my surprise birthday party night out on Sunday. And where the final pub we went to had a very steep flight of stairs.
Yes.
And some would say it's maybe quite... just natural imbalance. Some would say alcohol.
Inebriation probably played a little factor.
Bit of column A, bit of column
but
B.
They're tight stairs in this bar. It's another stairs. One you're talking about. But it's also got like an area to kind of the side of each step, which doesn't help. It's just like a little skirting board that kind of juts out. But if you accidentally step on that, you're fucked.
And I was fucked. and I didn't think any more of it. I walked home.
Yeah, and I was. Which is it's like, always good when you take a massive tumble. You go, I'll walk it off.
It's fine.
I'll walk it off.
Because I'd had a drink and I was just like, it's fine. Yeah. Woke up the next morning with like blood on the bed sheets and my jeans ripped to pieces. and in screaming agony. Oh. I was like, the alcohol really disguised how awful this was.
Yeah.
And I had big plans for my birthday day. The Monday I had off, I've been doing Couch to 5K again.
Yeah.
And I was going to run, like I got to the final week, which was going to start on my birthday, and there was something quite exciting about being able to say I've run the furthest as an adult on my 38th birthday. I just didn't do it. I couldn't
technically
move.
Maybe you fell the furthest you've ever fallen.
I definitely did.
So
I don't think I've fallen that far. So I just spent the day just I sat up on the sofa feeling sorry for myself because I was just like, I can't really do anything today.
Yeah.
Because my leg hurts too much. But do you know what? It could have been worse. I could have landed on my head and there could have been a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, thankfully you didn't.
Thankfully the brain is as shit as it always was. Yeah. No, but the leg is on the mend. But it was honestly, it was lovely though, because we finished Cultaholic Live here on the Sunday. And Adam just said, do you fancy a pint, Tom? I went, yeah, sure. And we went to a pub around the corner where my good lady and everybody else was.
Yeah.
And I just said to Adam, what would you have done if I'd said no? Like the whole ploy to get me there was just go, do you fancy a pint? I was like, yeah.
There wasn't really much other option. So we were kind of hoping that Alex had somehow subliminally like.
she'd asked me a few times, what time are you home on the Sunday? And I said, I'll be about 3-ish. And so I just thought, well, maybe she's wrapping a present or something and she doesn't want me to burst in. So even I messaged her and said, I'm going to go for a pint with Adam. I'll be having a bit. And she said, no worries, let me know when you're leaving.
Yeah.
And which I thought, I just read as, leaving the pub. Didn't think any more of it.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, she sat in there with a few of the guys from Triple Jump and a few of the guys who got on. What would you have done, Adam, if I'd said, no, I don't fancy a pint?
Headlock, AJ Hazard, you'd get the skill set out. Barrel you into an Uber.
It was lovely to see everybody and the bottom of the stairs as well.
I'm glad you had a nice time.
I had a great time. Here comes my 38th trip round the sun. Let it be memorable. But let's go back. I'd like to take us back today to 1995 when I was about to begin my 12th trip around the sun.
Yeah.
God, I'm old. For WCW Nitro flavored goodness. This is where Sam Driver and I watch every episode of Nitro from the very beginning all the way to its bitter end, or maybe one of ours.
Whichever comes first.
It's nearly happened. Are you all COVID-free now? But I guess you have to because you're in the office. But are you feeling...
No, I specifically caught it again to come in and lick everything.
Well done, should.
I just figure if we're on Spotify, we can spread as much misinformation. No, of course, I'm COVID-free. I can.
Everyone's getting hiding from sound today. It's
but
great.
I'm of course like tested negative out the arse, and you know it's
shouldn't be putting it there, mate. Let's put it in your nostrils.
Yeah, it was a weird, like it's not really had many effects on me, like residual ones, but my brain gets a bit foggy, so I might taper off, and you might have to lead me back.
I know people that had brain fog on it.
Yeah, and I can't get to sleep like some ever. Nights. It just kind of goes like, it's 4 a.m. and you're wide awake, and I'm like,
You got like a weird insomnia thing.
It just every now and then, even now, like last night was another night, like you just sitting there and I'm just kind of working away, just messing around with some software. And then it was like, fuck, like it's 3 o'clock. I've got to get to fucking bed. I've got to be up in like 4 hours.
Do you just find you lose track of time?
Yeah, completely.
When you're doing stuff?
Yeah. Or if I'm absorbed in it, I do anyway. So that probably hasn't helped, but.
But especially so. But yeah. Okay, so did you get sleep at 4 last night?
About 3. I kind of just went straight through and just went, right, force yourself. So probably, about 3:30, 4.
You seem well with it today.
Yeah, I've had a lot of coffee.
Good shout. good shout. We're in 1995. We have gone back to November the 6th, 1995 for this week's episode of the Cultaholic Classic Nature Review. So I'm going to give you a few things to ponder on for this particular week before we go through the episode.
Hit me with some childhood, Tom.
Here's some childhood coming straight at you. Robson and Jerome.
Oh.
Top of the UK charts.
Unchained Melody, is it?
No, I Believe. Slash, Up on the Roof.
Ooh, okay.
Their second number one. Number one in the US charts is Mariah Carey, Fantasy. Still, it is hanging on in there. It's
just
the Undertaker streak of
songs. Clinging to it.
Yeah, it's just storming the charts in America. In the UK box office, French Kiss, starring Meg Ryan and Kevin Kline, is number one.
Kevin Kline is a name I have not heard in many years.
Wow. Do you know what? We live in an age where I'm so frightened to say, what happened to that actor?
Yeah.
Because I
just assumed it was like one of those Bill Paxton, Bill Pullman situations where my brain would immediately default the other one's name in to their face. So I'd always get it wrong. So I'd always see like Bill Pullman and go, it's Bill Paxton. And I was like, no, it's not. It's fucking...
The Paxton-Pullman conundrum.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not either of them. It's Kevin Kline.
I know.
And number one in the US box office is Get Shorty. John Travolta, Gene Hackman, Rene Russo, and Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
I have recently... I have a newfound love. I loved him anyway, but a newfound love for Danny DeVito.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
Because, and you're going to be annoyed with me probably, but... Only about 2 weeks ago did I watch for the first time Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Fuck me, Tom. It's taking you this long. Like I am slow to get on series. Like I've got a backlog that's just piling up by the day. But mate, you're in for a hell of a ride.
Well, we started watching it at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. We finished up about 11 p.m.
Yeah.
We are, and we've just been chipping away at it for the last couple of weeks. I think we're now just starting season 13.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, what a journey. Yeah. What a great show.
It's just
amazing.
It's Seinfeld on crack.
It really is.
That's it. You know, it is
that.
It's a lot of just what the fuck situations that come out of nothing.
Mm.
And just terrible people getting their terrible comeuppance.
Awful people. Awful, awful people.
But the best awful people.
But the greatest of all people. Yeah, Dan DeVito is just a star.
Everybody's an awful person, really.
We are all really awful people. But Danny DeVito is great in that, as he was in Get Shorty. Twisted Metal's the big video game release for the PS1.
Nice. I've got a Twisted Metal ice cream scoop.
Where'd you get that from?
Just some fucking loot box at some point that we had to review.
And there was an ice cream scoop in the shape of Twisted Metal in there.
Yeah, or it might have been like a little press pack thing. But yeah, there was a little Twisted Metal ice cream scoop with the clown on it. What's he called again?
Twisted Metal.
Yeah, that's his name. Mr. Metal.
Keith
the main
Metal.
Character.
He's the one. He's the one that you are racing to meet with, because I believe the plot of Twisted Metal is it's a like a Destruction Derby style thing, tournament. And the winner gets one wish granted in this broken post-apocalyptic world.
So it's the original Money in the Bank then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to get a lot of shit for this, but I preferred Vigilante 8, but only because I had Vigilante 8. I didn't have Twisted Metal initially. Mm. So like I played the arse out of Vigilante 8. Loved it to death, but everybody else liked Twisted Metal and I just didn't have it. So for me, Vigilante 8 is my car combat game.
Vigilante
that and
7.
Cell Damage. Cell Damage is, oh my God.
Oh, Cell Damage. There's a game I haven't heard of in a while.
So, so good.
That's the one on the Xbox, wasn't it? Cell Damage.
It was on the GameCube first, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was one of those, when I worked at Game, it was one of those budget titles.
Yeah.
Like £15, always pre-owned.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, car combat games had fallen out of the mainstream after Burnout as a series started to dwindle because, you know, ultimately Burnout wasn't even really comparable to like a Twisted Metal or even a Destruction Derby. They all had their own flavors, but actual physical car combat, like I'm going to drive around and smash you. Like it's kind of like the arena mode in Mario Kart, right? Or whatever that's called, like the battle where you got to get balloons. And it's fun, but, you know, it's not sit and play it for 6 to 8 hours fun.
I like that WWE jumped on that bandwagon just as the bandwagon was pulling away.
Yeah. I still never played Crush Hour.
Oh.
I played little bits of it now, but I never had the pleasure of playing it, you know, when I would have appreciated it most when I was like, you know, a kid and really, really, really like obsessed with wrestling.
I feel like it's a stream waiting to happen.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
When we get to, especially when we get to 02 on the SmackDown.
It ain't a great game.
Oh, no, it's bullshit. But I think there is just something in playing it and just hearing Jim Ross, you know, AEW's Jim Ross saying, Kane has got the twisty rockets over and over. Last night in the boxing world in this year, 1995, Riddick Bowe beat Evander Holyfield 8 rounds in Las Vegas.
Yeah, take that, Evander.
And this past Friday, the Hubble telescope sent back pictures of a star being born.
Nice. And now we've got a whole new telescope. We've got the James Webb telescope, haven't we?
Just does it only look at James Webb?
Well, no, it's hiding behind the moon.
So it's I haven't heard
shielded
this.
By the moon so it can see more. It's like a brand new, it's on its, I think it's, how it took hide? Like 28 days to get fully deployed. I don't know if it's in full position yet, but it's going to be sitting on the other side of the moon to take really crazy photos.
And you'll be able to control it from the moon.
Yeah, because obviously the moon is like in the way. So that big shadow, like none of the light impacts it. So it can just sit in the dark and
look out beyond the dark side of the moon. Mm. Oh my God, Pink Floyd, we're livid.
Yeah. Pink Floyd, yeah, gimmick infringement.
I didn't know
that. Not
that
they can get along well enough together to probably leverage a lawsuit.
Not fans of each
other. As much as I just really fucking want you guys to just do just one thing, I will sell both kidneys. I don't care how fucking long I'll live afterwards. Just hook me up to some sort of bag that lasts the show and I'm good.
If Fleetwood Mac get back together...
I know the Eagles can get back together. But like it was like 150 quid for restricted view. It was like when I nearly saw Roger Waters, I think when he was doing The Wall, but it was like 120 quid and it was like nosebleeds, restricted view. And I was like, fuck,
it was expensive.
I was broke at the time. So it was like, I hope in hell that I can't afford a 20 quid gig ticket, let alone this.
It was Alex's main Christmas present the one year. Yeah. Like, she knew it was the main. That's your main, that is.
Price is printed on it.
Yeah, we're going to Fleetwood Mac. That's your main one, 2018. Enjoy. You're not getting anything else for your birthday. Joint Christmas and birthday present. Ratings are in. Last week, Raw got a 2.1. Nitro got a 2.3.
Oh, that means, you know what we all know.
Even in pushing
Raw
ahead.
Sucks. Yeah.
We had a great, like this week on the Raw review, which you'll hear the one we recorded yesterday on Monday, because time is a construct of human perception. The whole thing, like the thing that I'm enjoying watching both at the moment is that the Raw can't compete in terms of the financial side of things for Nitro. So they can't afford to go live every week to compete. And they're just going, look, we've got a tape. It's just that's the way of the business. So we just got to make these taped episodes feel like can't miss television.
So what we're going to do to fool the papers is we're going to record different endings to each match. Could you imagine?
Well, kind of. Do you know what? You're not completely wrong with how they were doing it.
Okay.
Because there were some episodes of Raw where they would tape, they would do a live one and then a taped one.
Yeah.
There was somewhere they'd do a taped episode and then they do the live one that the taped one was being built to. So you'd have two episodes in reverse order.
Weird.
And there was a couple of occasions where they'd film the first half of next week's episode.
Yeah.
They do this week's episode live, and then they'd film the second half of next week's episode.
It just sounds like a logistical nightmare. But at the same time, like the cost of going live, and especially at this time for a weekend World Wrestling Federation, you know, still reeling after the effects of the trial and trying to find its feet in a different landscape that it can no longer go back to being what it was. I mean, it will for a little bit, but right now it's got to change drastically. And, you know, when Nitro's live, it live sports just feels more real, doesn't it?
So WWF are doing this thing to make it at least perceived as live.
Yeah.
So the audience don't quite know what's coming next, nor do the... I need a drink of water. I sent in my tooth. Nor did the people writing it up.
Yeah.
It's all in weird, haphazard order. WCW are presenting World War III in a couple of weeks' time. We will be doing a watch along of that.
Sorry, just... Oh, for God's sakes. Right, yeah, let's crack on. I love the concept.
It's a great idea.
As a kid, I went apeshit for World War III, but as an adult, it's impossible to keep track of.
A logistical nightmare.
I don't know.
That's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, because booking one rumble is hard enough, but booking three separate rumbles occurring at once to then turn into one match. Jesus.
It's one of those things where Bischoff was trying to make sure that WCW was everything that WWF wasn't.
Yeah, and as a spectacle, it's amazing. Like, I remember, because by the time I got into it, World War I had already happened. But I'd seen pictures, and I'd seen, like, the backs of certain tapes, and it was like, there's three rings. Like, it's amazing. And, like, War Games blew my mind, because it's like, oh, there's two rings. So, like, three was obviously the next step.
Mm.
But the problem is, like, you know, it's hard enough with two rings and floor space and everybody being able to see everything. But when you put a third in there, Christ, like, rings are huge. And I think WCW worked an 18-foot ring. I don't think they worked the full 20-foot, but yeah, because WWE is a 20-foot. But even then, like, that just that 2 feet off doesn't really leave you much floor space when you need all the guardrails, you need all the mats.
No, and it's very crowded.
Yeah,
and also you lose seating.
Just keep track of on the wide. It's like, wow.
You lose seating as well.
That's what I was saying. Like, there's just no floor space. So, like, you know, you kind of, those very expensive front row seats, there's less of. There's, you know, how you're going to do it. But, you know,
maybe you're hiring more wrestlers.
Maybe Turner were aware of this. You know, they've got the finances to do it at the time, and they're happy to promote it.
WWF are very concerned about World War III.
I can imagine they would be, because, you know, it's the 90s, and in the 90s, I mean, Christ, you know, we're the generation that had Pokemon and Sonic the Hedgehog, and everything needed a gimmick. Everything needed a gimmick to sell, because we were very impressionable kids. And if it was bigger, it was better. So, you know, you didn't want this toy, you wanted that one because it had, you know, extra features. You didn't want this one, you wanted that one. You don't want, you know, one rumble in one ring, you want three at once. Mm-hmm. And so it was, the 90s was this decade of just more. And now I think we're still kind of in the back end of that now, because we've got this kind of instant gratification from the fact that, you know, we had a whole decade as kids of just, you know, they knew what we wanted before we wanted it. Like, they just knew, like, oh, well, we're going to release this toy and then we'll do a glow-in-the-dark version. You'd still want it.
Yeah.
But it glowed in the dark.
Yeah. I knew what you meant. But yeah, and you're right, because, like, everybody wants the next big thing. So WWF are very concerned that their bottom line for Royal Rumble, which is one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year, is going to be heavily affected by WCW just a month or two prior running something that's twice the size.
Yeah. So what they should have done to really just, you know, stop the Monday Night Wars from ever happening was they should have done an event called the Cold War, but the A's are four. And they go to Alaska, and it's just some random, like, truck stop. You know, it doesn't need to be anywhere fancy. Put four rings up in the snow. And you just fit the four in there with the A.
That's an amazing idea.
You'd need a big Russian heel for each of the rings. Yeah. And I don't know, like, maybe, you know, WCW style panic, you'd need like a big red button that's going to set off nukes, and Hulk Hogan's it wouldn't be Hogan. It'd be Christ at this time. You know, you're going to have somebody jump in, save the day.
Fartu.
Save America.
Make a difference, Fartu.
Diving over the button, sacrificing himself to save America.
It's an amazing idea.
Yeah.
But do you know how they
get me in a time machine? Let's go tank the
Do you know, when you go, tell them that this is a good idea, because obviously at the moment WCW has got a working arrangement with New Japan, which we'll talk more of in the actual show itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And WWF is seeing that WCW has these relationships with other promotions, and they're saying we probably should get a bit of what would probably be known as a forbidden door action of our own.
Ain't nobody knows anybody in Japan. I'll tell you what everybody in America wants, and then in comes the NWA.
Well, you're not far off. Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yeah.
USWA.
Yeah.
But Wrestling Romance in Japan.
Yes.
WWF want to strike up some deals to bring some stars across to start some inter-promotional-like rivalries. And this is in direct response to WCW working with other promotions.
Yeah. War is... Is it Tenryu's promotion? So there's kind of a prior established link with Tenryu before.
Former WrestleMania
So, star. Yeah, it's like, you know, you can... They have been known to do that. There was obviously the Super World of Sports relationship, and I think 1992 as well, which I think SWS didn't really last. SWS's logo, by the way, is just a giant dinosaur. But if you find the banner, because the English doesn't really translate well, it just says SWS, Super World of Sports. You've got this like reptar side on, and then it just says strong and straight. And it's just, I can't, every time I see it, I just howl. It's just, I don't
know. Me think Godzilla does protest too much.
I don't know why. It just tickles me. I'm like, just the way it's worded.
It's a strange, yeah. I've seen the logo. I didn't know about the wording. For World War III, some of the names bandied around at this early stage include Tito Santana,
Dean Ambrose. Santana, yeah.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Coming to WCW.
They need bodies.
Big
man.
Shout there.
Rick Martel.
Yeah.
The shouts get bigger. The Iron Sheik.
Sheiky Baby.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't get thrown out of any of them rings, so yeah. Chances are he'd win the whole thing.
He just refused to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
He could just stretch everybody, because he is an actual straight-up wrestler.
Chuck him in all of them. But we'll see who...
all the rings. You just slice them up like salami, and there's just really thin versions of the Sheik everywhere.
If you're getting Sergeant Slaughter in, why isn't he working with Cobra? Or Sergeant
Cobra's
Craig Pittman.
You know what's happening.
Cobra's toast. More on that in a moment. An ECW tag team being courted at the moment by WWF and WCW. We're talking about the Public Enemy.
Yeah, no surprise there.
They had a meeting with Vince the other day, and they're going to end up working a dark match at Survivor Series coming up. But they are fielding offers from WCW at this time via Paul Heyman as well, where, spoiler, they will eventually land. That's it.
The pub. You ready for the entrance? You just got to do this for like five straight minutes while they're setting up tables and shouting at people. But it's fun. It's a whole lot of fun.
It's a great time. They have a great time. Come and see the greatest show at the Oddities. Ignore that part.
Yeah, God.
Really, really interesting episode of ECW, which reflects WCW this week. Remember that that no-name Mark Nobody has been do nothing jobber Steve Austin that WCW rightly cast out?
No, because he's so insignificant.
He's so insignificant.
He, like, you may as well be talking about, is it Dennis Stamp?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's not booked.
He's not booked. So why should we care, you know?
Well, he's on ECW kicking up quite a stink.
Yeah, bingo hall. Nobody cares about that. I'll ring him and phone him again and tell him he's fine.
This week ECW's Hardcore TV was the most talked about show in wrestling because it featured Steve Austin wearing a black wig impersonating Eric Bischoff announcing an episode of Monday Night Quill where the big boys play with each other.
So good, man.
He got some funny lines in pretending to fall asleep during calling the matches. He built up to a geritol on a pole match for all the old codgers to fight in. He had a set of bongos sat next to him called Mongo. Basically just completely ripping the piss out of WCW, and it was a deep joy.
It's just that big Stevie cool, like, it just not big Stevie cool. What is it? The
Superstar Steve.
Steve. Yeah, when he's got the Stevester, where he's got like the little do-rag on and everything, and it's just, oh man. It's all gold. If you've not seen any of Steve Austin's ECWs, just go. Do yourself a favor, go find it, watch it. It's the very genesis of Stone Cold.
Yeah.
He's finding his feet with it, but it's there. And you can kind of start to see by the end it's starting to shine through. It's just lush.
We are live tonight for WCW Nitro in Jacksonville, Florida. It's an interactive special.
That's right, yeah. What was it they said? You called the shots! The phone line is no longer active, however, and I think that's bollocks, and Vince should be giving us the number. I don't care if I ring up and it's like, hello, Jacksonville, auto care. I'd just be like, yeah, I want Macho Man versus Sting.
We got another one. It's been going on for 15 years, this has. One day we will give a match versus Sting. So this is Taboo Tuesday years before, in theory.
And on the network, it's not quite properly addressed. I don't know if it was like announced. It kind of just happens, doesn't it? There's no real like fanfare about it. And here's the decision.
Well, then no, it's not at all. It's awfully put together. Yeah. And I don't think that's a network thing. I think that is just bad organization from WCW.
It's kind of like it's very early days for concepts like this, right? So it's all kind of like, how do we do it? Just get out there, go.
I just thought it was like, okay, we'll get to it. So anyway, it's an interactive special. You call in and you vote for who you want to see fight who. And basically you have to pick somebody from the red locker room and somebody from the blue locker room.
Yeah.
The red locker room contains Ric Flair, Meng, DDP, the Blue Bloods, Big Bubba Rogers, Shark, and Scott Norton. That's the red locker room.
Big
the blue
toot.
Locker room contains Sting, Johnny B. Badd, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Dave Sullivan, Alex Wright, the Nasty Boys, and Mr. JL.
I wonder who's going to be in the match.
Now, before we find out, like, Sam, who would you have put in this if you were making the phone call? Because here's an opportunity to really make something quite interesting.
Let me see the names again.
Okay, so there's the names.
So we've got where's the red locker room? Red locker room. Okay, so we got Ric Flair, Meng, DDP, Blue Bloods, Big Bubba Rogers. I mean, it's got to be like Big Turnt. Like, come on, Tenta versus Jerry Lynn. John Tenta versus Jerry Lynn strikes me as something that you've got Jerry Lynn trying to hit all the spinning back kicks and going ape shit, and you've got John Tenta just trying to grab a hold of him and ground him. But that's just because I'm a sucker for David and Goliath matches. Like I've got a load of shit about this before, but I just like them. I just really like David and Goliath style, you know, showdowns.
I like that idea. Yeah. Well, that's quite nice. I'm going to go with, I'd like to see Stephen Regal from the Blue Bloods,
yeah,
versus Sting.
Yeah,
nice. I'll do Regal,
yeah.
Sting.
Regal Sting. Yeah.
Or can we do Mr. JL versus? It's all big lads, isn't it? DDP versus Jerry Lynn.
That'd be quite nice.
Be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
DDP versus Alex Wright.
Anything.
Brian Knobbs versus Ric Flair.
Yeah, that's what people want. That's really what people want.
See what they do with that. But anyway, so you basically you call up and you say who you want from which locker room, and then
they promptly disregard it, and you get what they want you to get. I feel
they lean very heavily towards one particular idea.
Yeah, there's only a couple of people that are allowed to talk in each of the segments, and you can tell because everybody else is really trying to get in on the camera and be loud.
Oh my god, it's incredible.
Including at one point, Hacksaw while Sting's talking.
Yes!
Hacksaw is just he's got a 2x4 in one hand, a chair in the other, and he's off screen. Launches the chair. So this chair out of nowhere just goes whoop across the screen, and then he kind of stomps over, and then the 2x4 goes whoomp, and then he stomps over with the chair, and he does it a few times, and then just throws them both down, blocks Sting off completely, and starts just mugging off to the camera while Sting's trying to do the sign off.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. We'll cross to them in a minute, but we've got to open with a recap of the Giant being injured by Lex Luger. Sorry, Savage being injured by Lex Luger at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
And Randy Savage is apparently... Right, Randy Savage is apparently backstage and he's going nuts. He can't get cleared to wrestle. He's throwing furniture around and slamming doors. Sounds like he's fine. I don't know why he hasn't been cleared.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of energy that goes into that.
If you think this is building to something tonight with Savage... No.
That ain't happening.
Stay tuned for partial disappointment. we open with the question mark asterisks over this. The WCW World Heavyweight Champion, the Giant.
Yep.
Versus Cobra.
Yeah.
Cobra's music cuts through me like a knife. I don't know whether it's the sound editing.
Cobra has the shittest entrance in the world. Cobra walks down like a G.I. Joe, all smiles with his fucking dog tag on, gives his dog tag to some kid, Bret Hart style. You know, nice. You know, like, there's your thing, kid. There, yeah. He's just a white meat baby face, right? He's just, you know, I'm like a G.I. Joe style figure now. Comes down and, you know, doing the salute and shit. Gets in the ring, and then down comes the Giant, and the Giant just ends him with one move.
That's it.
It's just choke slam, done.
Runs at him, choke slams him, one, two, three. It's a match that's over in about 4 seconds,
Jeff Farmer, who would play, who played Cobra, this is by no means the end of him. Like, as he's not like saddled with the Cobra gimmick and just, you know, left to rot with it. He will come back under a different guise and prove to be popular and very popular overseas, but he proved to be quite popular in like the biggest storyline of the 90s. So he is kept around for a bit.
He can always say forever after this match, in theory, that he had a shot at the WCW World Heavyweight Championship because Giant, before the match started, picked up David Penza and insisted that he announce this as a WCW title match.
Yeah, Penza got out. The following is a WCW championship match, and just peeled out of the ring.
That's it. So Cobra can say forever he had a crack. He failed miserably, but he at least had a crack. More from the Giant in a little bit and that particular nonsense regarding the WCW title. We now go to the red and blue locker rooms ahead of our interactive night. And as Sam said a minute ago, there is it's so much noise. It's like who's the guy that painted those landscapes? Like, it's like a Lowry painting.
Right.
Like, there's just lots going on and I can't really focus on anything.
You'd just rather look away.
I'd rather look away. Sorry, Lowry. No, sorry, not sorry. You've got, so Gene Oakland's in the baddie locker room, the red locker room. Mm. He's trying to get some order because Norton and Shark are sort of grappling each other on the side. You've got Flair posing in a t-shirt. DDP is there. Bubba's taking his gear off. The Blue Bloods sat behind everybody reading and drinking tea.
Yeah, but the camera reveal makes them just look like they're really short because you can't initially see that they're sat down. So like there's still a bit of wrestler in the way, so it looks like they're literally children with like adult faces just reading these books.
it's a hilarious bit, but just very noisy. The Blue Locker Room, similar levels of carnage. Everybody shouting. Duggan, as you say, throwing his 2x4, constantly walking back and forth in front of the camera. They're all just gurning and mugging. Sting wants a piece of Ric Flair. Sting's the only one that gets a vague line in here saying that he's encouraging fans to vote for him to face Ric Flair.
Yeah.
So that's when you... Because, again, they explain this whole concept so poorly. I went into this thinking, so the whole night, it's going to be people from different locker rooms fighting different people's locker rooms.
Yeah.
That's an interesting... But no, it's just the one match.
But the way they describe it as well is basically you call in, you tell us what you want.
Mm.
It's never quite explicitly, you know, repeatedly stated. Because if you just join the broadcast late and it's like, you get to call the shots, ring in, and you're like, yeah, I'd really like to see two wrestlers that aren't on this list of people.
Yeah.
Like, what do they do?
Can I have something off menu, please?
You know, it's probably like $5 a minute. So, they're not up for choice. Here are the following choices. Like, you'd be paying out the arse. Oh. And you'd be so dissatisfied by the end of the call.
The one thing WCW was excellent and consistent at was rinsing you on phone lines.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, some of the phone lines, didn't Oakland sort of run his phone line, though? Like, the gossip one, I think, was Oakland's own little
side. And a big part of his signing deal was that he'd bring over his hotline, but he was going to get... Yeah. Money from it.
So, like, the hotline was very popular in the 90s anyway. Like, you know, you would ring into music stations to request videos. You'd ring into radio stations to request. And it's largely been replaced by social media, obviously, now. But it was just your radio stations would always be in a different, you know, college in the US doing giveaways, doing a live show during spring break. Like, I think the just traditional media was so big at the time, and it was really one of our only... you know, pleasures, because the internet was very young, and you know, there wasn't, you know, Netflix, there wasn't anything like that, there wasn't a YouTube, so you had TV, and so you cared about what was on TV, and often enough to actually call in and register interest in I want this.
But the only calls that would get to air are when they're going to play something that they've got planned to play.
Yeah.
Shock revelation. Emotional damage. Something I learned. A commercial airs for World War III, which is on Sunday, November the 26th. Three, all the rings, all the people. It's going to be fucking carnage. Right. We check in with Hulk Hogan.
Can we just set the scene? Can I set the scene?
Mate, please do, because this is just fucking bonkers.
It's Venice Beach. They're in that little blue bit where all of the big Ripley guys work out. There's a couple of business people on their lunch just hanging around and kind of smiling because you've got Macho Man, you've got Hulk Hogan, and they're all just kind of sat around in full gimmick with just a guy in a grubby shirt and a beard who's just trying to talk over them the entire time, and a busker on rollerblades with flowers in his guitar. And then surrounding that is, as I said, 90s power business suits, like maybe, you know, verging on a little bit out of fashion. There were some definite shoulder pads in there. There was some, you know, a lot of Wall Street looking people for some reason on Venice Beach this day. But yeah, they're kind of sat around in the glistening sun. And there is your scene.
Was this meant? Because like it is, as you rightly say, it's Hogan Savage. And then like this homeless guy sat between them.
It's
like talking drunkenly.
While Hogan is still hulking? While Hulk Hogan is still like freshly shaved as well. He looks like, he literally looks like a bare, you know, shaven penis after maybe you've slipped going too far doing a bit cleanup. Like he's going, I'm just going to have to take it all off. And Hulk Hogan without the mustache is just, it's just, I can't, no. Come on, buddy.
It's so weird.
Come on, buddy.
Was this
throw the tash out?
Was this meant this to sell me? Was it meant to sell me the ideal of living in Venice Beach, California?
I think if you live in Venice Beach, you live in Venice Beach. I think that I think vaguely it's, you know, a place for skating and for working out.
It just looked
that's
like,
all I know.
And the pic, because the stuff that I've seen them shoot in Venice Beach is where you've got like that glistening golden sand and the blue sky.
There's no establishing shots. It just kind of starts off camera and just goes straight into it. So you see like a tiny bit of blown out overexposed beach and then...
And then the guy drunkenly singing like, Hogan's back in Venice Beach.
And people are just cackling.
It looked like he lived in the slums.
Well, he's down there with the everyman, right?
And this is what but I thought they were trying to achieve.
At the same time, you've got to remember that Hulkamania is very much in question right now.
Right.
Like, he's wearing black
broke?
Still. He's a bit broken.
So but like, it looks like he's broke as opposed to broken.
It feels like they want to show him hanging around like... You know, a more
drunks.
Raw, like a more raw, more realistic environment because it's not now all sunshine and rainbows and cartoon character living for Hulk Hogan. He's Hulkamania's gone. And so, well, at least it seems like it could be going.
Wow.
So for me, it felt like maybe they're trying to do that. But at the same time, I'm probably reading far too much into it. And they were like, shit, we got to shoot something. Bollocks, we're supposed to be doing a guest shot on that TV show. We're at the beach. Just fucking go.
Do you know what? I kind of had a feeling they were going for like Hogan's an everyman thing.
Yeah.
But I just, it kind of felt like they went too far the other way. And he just looked like he was poor.
Yeah, maybe it didn't give off quite the right look. But I was thinking maybe it's to show like, you know, Hogan's going off the rails a bit. He's not like, he's not hanging around as usual. Like it doesn't look like a Hogan thing. Like he's not posing, he's not over the top, like he's well, he is over the top, but not nearly to standard Hogan levels. And he's got Macho to bounce off. So it's weird.
And bounce they do, because now Savage is on Hogan's side 100% in this. And they're both wearing black. Hogan asks Savage to stick with him and they'll burn through their hit list on the dark side. Savage says he's going to be with Hulk forever and ever. And then he says, Sullivan took your mustache. The Giant took your world belt. You're too emotionally involved in this situation. You take the low road and I'll take the high road. So Savage is saying here, I'm going to go to Nitro and see who's on your side.
Yeah.
You chill out here with these mentals. And I'll be back in a bit. I've written here an absolutely mental segment. The wrestling equivalent.
Terry, you stay here and try some PCP. I'm going to go.
What?
It doesn't make any sense.
I think I've put an absolutely mental segment. The wrestling equivalent of every British pub, that every British pub video that does the rounds every 6 months.
Yeah.
You know that one where they're in the pub and there's the woman dancing and then the old boy walks
past. Yeah, I think Steph used to work in that pub, you know.
No!
She knows the exact pub. It's in Doncaster. Yeah. It's like an actual pub
in Doncaster.
It's
not far then.
No, it's not far. It's like a real thing.
Like
she can identify people in like who they are in the scene. It's like, what?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
We need a road trip there. I want to drink in that pub. I want to fill the Hogan Savage bit in that pub. It's amazing. And it just, because it's got that vibe for me, because every time I watch it, I see something different. This Hogan bit.
It's like, imagine Parts Unknown was a room. And
it
was just this shitty little corner of Titan Towers. And you just walked in through this door and you open it and there's just a vast, endless... It's like a Dali painting. It's like, what the fuck is happening here? And you just gently back out as the wind's just going... You just back out of it. If you kind of stepped in and looked around, either the door would disappear or it'd just be a door frame with nothing behind it, just empty.
You know how you said, and I think there's a point to be made here, where you said, like, this is them going for something less cartoony and something a bit more earthy and real for Hogan.
Yeah.
Right, I haven't watched next week's episode yet, but I've seen the thumbnail.
And?
They go the opposite direction.
It's Hulk Hogan. As I said, I was probably reading far too much into it. They're probably just showing Hogan in like an everyday setting. Maybe reassessing his choices. Oh, is he hanging around with the right characters here? Oh, no. What's he going to do? What's Hogan going to do?
Brother.
That kind of shit.
We'll see. I can't wait to see what they do next week.
You know he's coming back with the fucking bells and whistles.
Of course he is.
He's coming back to the Hogan pot.
He's on his trip to the dark side at the moment, and it's only going to get weirder.
Yeah, and he ain't no telescope.
He's not on the wrong side of the moon. Kevin Sullivan is fighting Renegade.
Oh, yes, he is.
Renegade charging to the ring gets a bit of a pop.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, Sullivan, my main takeaway from this was that Sullivan is goals. Because I could never be like skinny. I've got like too big a rib cage, but I could be a little muscly barrel.
Yeah. You know,
I'm like, I could be a little muscly barrel.
Bit of a bollard. That.
Yeah. Like, you know, if a car hit me, I'd probably be all right. I'd still fly, but, you know, it'd suck, but I'd probably be all right. I'd maybe, like, bounce and roll.
Not go muscly, but go, like, thick.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit like Taz.
Yeah, but, yeah, Renegade comes out and...
Those clotheslines that he threw, yeah. I thought he was going to hurt him. That was just some horrible, unsafe-looking lariats just flying at whatever's nearby.
That shit in. But it'll come in handy, you know. It'll come in handy because Renegade is... This match has an importance for Renegade as a character, but ultimately it's worthless as a match. Like, it doesn't really do much else. But at the end, at the conclusion, after Kevin Sullivan wins... Jimmy Hart gets into the ring and scrubs off the Renegade's face paint. And he's telling him, you're not no Renegade, and going off about how he's like Hogan's puppet and all this shit, and just really getting in his face about it. He's like, his name's Rick. And he's really just like laying into him. Yeah. And Renegade would disappear after this.
This is it. This is the last.
Yeah, we're in November, and Renegade would come back in February, but he would no longer be in the Warrior singlet. I think he might initially, but he's very much changed by, you know, his second run when it solidifies. Like, he's in I think he's in trunks, and he's got, like, you know, armbands and stuff.
He had like a little stripper look about him.
Yeah, he doesn't look at all like Warrior. And I don't know if this was maybe a legal thing, because I don't know if Jim Helwig owned the rights to the gimmick at this point. Because he would later go on to obviously change his name to Warrior and all that stuff. But unless this has already happened, but it may have been one of those things where he was like, you know, come on, man.
Like, well, at this point, Warrior is mounting a wrestling comeback away from WWF and WCW.
Yeah.
A WWF comeback is imminent. Whether there were some legal challenges on this, very likely. It could just be a case of WCW just gone, this was a shit idea, let's scrub it from existence.
Warrior's not really as over as he was right now. Like, you know, he'll still be over in obviously it's the 90s, it's the Ultimate Warrior, but like, he's not exactly, you know, the burning thing at the front of everybody's mind that was there when the Renegade was kind of brought in the first time. There was excitement when it was going to be Warrior, and it fell flat when it was the Renegade, and ultimately it didn't do him any favors.
Mm-hmm. So this is it. And as you say, Jimmy Hart just bellows at him the whole match, constantly saying, you could have been the next Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Because when Hogan's not on the screen, we should be asking, where's Hogan?
I think it was mainly meant to intend that Hogan deliberately took the Renegade, you know, under his wing in order to stop the Renegade from eclipsing him.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing, which, you know, ultimately Jimmy Hart's words ringing maybe very, very close to home there. Because, you know, we've heard about this sort of thing happening before. And it wouldn't really be that far out. And I don't know if it was like an element to bring some reality to it, especially dropping his real name in there and like, you know, mugging off to the crowd and like wiping it all away. It just felt very raw for a WCW to do, like, show to do that. Because it was, you know, they were very much, you know, fuck, we started the Dungeon of Doom going on. So, like,
it's true. Back in the red locker room, it is carnage. Everybody is talking over everybody.
Because only one person gets to speak. The lights go out, the lights come back on.
That felt like a technical cock-up.
Yeah.
They thought the segment was done. Regal was about to talk, and the lights went off. And when the lights came back on, Flair pushed to the front, going, it doesn't matter if the lights are on or the lights are off! I want to fight Sting!
That wild look in his eye.
Just looks mental. Yeah, you get the lights back on in time for some woos and some words from Flair, but this was just another bit of nonsense. Call the phone line.
Do you think he gets
line.
Like that if he goes to like a Wendy's and his burger's cold, or he gets the wrong order?
Well, he's a single man now, so I imagine we're going to find out.
His Deliveroo arrives. And he just five things missing. He just gets in his Porsche, drives down to the actual restaurant, just starts cutting a massive promo on them.
I'm worried that because obviously now he's back on the market and he's back doing his own thing, we are about a few months away from a TikTok of somebody filming Ric Flair going mental in Waffle House or something.
Dropping an elbow on his jacket and stuff. It's Ric Flair.
Ric Flair going crazy in Waffle House.
I hate that voice. I hate that voice so much. Oh, when I meme compilations used to be one of my few pleasures in life. I don't have many pleasures in my life, but meme compilations was one of them. And now it's just crammed to the gills with fucking TikTok voice.
And it's the fact that there's a couple of variations, but they're all quite upbeat. So like you'll have somebody, they'll do a TikTok about their dog dying, and their voice will be, "I just had to bury my dog. I am very sad today." Oh, gosh. I feel sad for you because the voice is so chirpy.
But it's just robotically generating content. That's not what content creation's about. And yes, you can use robot-generated voices, but not when it's just a fucking staple thing.
Just the TikTok voice,
eventually,
isn't it?
There'll just be a TikTok where you fucking download it and it edits everything you want, and I'll be out of a job. Fucking screw TikTok. Vine was better. Vine for life.
Oh, yeah. I love Vine. I miss Vine, actually.
Vine compilations are the only place you're safe now from the TikTok voice, but...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
At the same time, you know, it very much creeps in. Somebody will try and slot a few TikToks into a Vine compilation. It's like, what are you doing? Get out of here.
WCW Saturday Night will see Kurosawa versus Arn Anderson.
Nice.
Disco Inferno's new music video gets played.
Is it for Disco Fever?
Yeah, I have no idea. I've not seen it. But it might be. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan is taking a trip to Ireland. I remember this.
Baffled. Like, were they on it? It must have been a house show loop. It must, like, why else, unless Jim Duggan was just like, "I'm going to Ireland," and they're like, "Oh fuck, we can't miss Jim Duggan in Ireland, we're sending a camera crew." Just him on a family holiday having a lovely time, can you imagine? He's just like, he's just out there looking at all these big beautiful natural sights, like just out, he's at the Guinness factory. It's just a family holiday trip that they've took the video off him and edited it to like his music.
So do you not remember this? Because no. I've seen this. So this is, okay, so we'll talk more about Jim it properly Duggan next week. So Jim Duggan is building to a taped fist match against somebody in WCW.
Oh, so we're getting the whole bare knuckle influence Ireland.
So we're going back to, he's going back to trace his family roots in Ireland.
Okay.
We'll put a pin in it. Because it's worth a fucking breakdown next week. Because if you thought the Hogan thing was a special cut of bollocks, this...
You know what it involves, Duggan's like one of the ultimate comic book cartoony era characters, though, isn't he? Like, you put a camera on him, even today, I'd imagine, you'd have just a shot of Duggan still milking every last drop out of it. Like, you know... Doesn't matter on the era. Like Duggan, even like much later on in WCW, when he becomes the television champion, like, and there was an awful story where he was turned into like the cleaner, and he would just go around and he was a janitor in the locker room, and he finds the belt, and he's just, I was so happy for him as a kid. It was like, yeah, Duggan's got it. And I just loved it. I think Duggan's like low key one of my faves from when I was a kid.
Bro, what if we make him Canadian?
Yeah, no.
Bro.
Bro, trust me, bro.
Trust me, bro.
And when Vince McMahon told me that I needed to hire a nanny, that's when I was out. Those are the only two Russo quotes I know.
Just anything, and yeah, the boy who cried pole match.
Yeah.
Bless him.
Bro, I've got it.
Bro.
We use Judy.
Chris Benoit faces Eddie Guerrero next.
I've
put in block capitals. How are we only 16 minutes into Nitro?
Yeah.
This feels like it's been going on for an hour.
Yeah, it's been a lot of front loading in this episode because as well, we should probably mention during the prior match, we have another cutaway to Bobby Heenan's Japanese associates who are sat... or is it during this match?
It is during this match where we get the cut.
During this match where we get, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll go into that in just a sec then. But yeah, we get Benoit versus Guerrero. And Benoit's aggression, that signature aggression we would all come to know, is very much on show. Like Eddie is getting hammered into the canvas. And those WCW rings did not have a lot of give. You watch him just go, whoop, and he's planted. There's no bounce.
It's not pretty.
It's just thud.
They look great, though.
They look great, but they're brutally smashing the shit out of each other.
And
but they got the crowd to wake up.
Oh, they really did.
Yeah.
And Eddie Guerrero is sort of quietly getting this big push in WCW. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of love for Eddie.
And they're peppering it in because, like, when you have Eddie making his entrance, Benoit walks out first to his weird dancey James Bond-esque music.
Yeah.
And then down comes Eddie, and it's like, back by popular demand, everybody loves this guy. You're going to see a lot more of him in World Championship Wrestling. And it felt like, you know, as the fans had reacted so positively to him, even, you know, no matter what was going on behind the scenes, if it was an agreed deal or whatever, like, it felt like that was something for the viewers.
Yes.
And it was like, here you go. Here's your first match. It's two, you know, hardworking, younger talents that are going to come out here and blow your fucking balls off. So, you know, it wasn't like a five-star match by any means, but it was brutally, you know, hard hitting.
Oh, just it
and
was.
Eddie going, you know, top rope. He goes from the top corner to the floor on the outside, wiping Benoit out. In the aisleway, like, people really pop for that. And it's just excitement. That's what Bischoff wanted out of them, and that's definitely what he got.
He wanted them just to light the place up. And as you rightly said at the beginning there, whilst this match is in progress, we see the New Japan Pro Wrestling contingent.
Which we don't
sat in the
know.
Crowd. We don't know they're from New Japan yet.
There's one indicator in this segment. So we've seen already Bobby Heenan sat eating sushi with Sonny Ono. This time we have Sonny Ono. Who else is it? Sonny Ono, Masahiro Chono, Masa Saito. Then I think it's Kensuke Sasaki and then Jushin Liger. Now everybody's in a suit except for Liger, who is in a training jacket. And the training jacket has the massive New Japan Pro Wrestling lion mark on it. So you're starting to get more little indicators that, okay, so there's more now. There are many Japanese people here. These guys are definitely wrestlers. Look at the fucking size of them. And they're all just kind of sat around drinking sake, eating sushi, because of course it's the 90s. And that's it. You just kind of have Bobby alluding to the fact that he's got business to take care of, and, you know, he's going to be talking to them. And it's all very, you know, ooh, what's going on there?
Wait, I like this use of Bobby.
Yeah.
As the go-between.
Oh, for sure.
With them in New Japan.
It fits his character perfectly.
Yeah. And it's just, I think for him, because the one thing that I remember from Bobby Heenan's book is that he always used to come in with such great ideas and big ideas. Nobody really cared to listen to them. They just wanted him to be Bobby Heenan on commentary and go home again. So I like the fact that this is early in and he's got something to sink his teeth into.
Yeah, something creative that he can kind of... I mean, because even when he was... I think it was maybe last week. It's been so long since we've shot. But like the last episode we did, I'm sure when they're eating sushi, him and Sonny Ono, he's like carefully getting rid of
he's
it.
He's pretending to eat it.
And he's like, oh, delicious. And all of this stuff. But like, he's getting that kind of freedom to actually do stuff, do fresh stuff, which is quite nice.
He gets handed an envelope.
But I tell you what, like, I didn't realize, like, as a kid, I loved Sonny Ono. I thought he was great. So it's been nice seeing him pop up every now and then.
You'll see more of it on WCW Pro, because on commentary, Bobby Heenan says he's promising the Japanese contingent will get showcased on Saturday morning.
Contingent it is, though. This is one of, like, the biggest upsides to a working agreement. You fucking look at the names. Oh my god!
Amazing. It's just that lineup of people.
And then we'd stunning. Have Tenzan added to it. There were a few more names that would come in. It wasn't just these names involved, but like the New Japan WCW working relationship went through until like 98, 99, didn't it? Like we had NWO Japan, of which, you know, Jeff Farmer, who I was talking about earlier as Cobra, he would become NWO Sting, and then he would become NWO Sting for NWO Japan, and then he'd just go off and have a fucking tear through Japan.
Stunning.
Like, and he's like a bigger household name there in terms of like wrestling fans knowing him. Maybe not, you know, nationally household, but wrestling fans probably know him more than we would ever if you just want Jeff Farmer.
But I like that he has lots to offer still.
Yeah.
And that's really
cool. Great.
As do these two. They have a great match, unsurprisingly. Yep. They end up brawling on the ring apron. Eddie reverses a suplex into the ring with a crossbody for the three. Bobby Heenan crying foul that Benoit's feet were under the ropes.
Yes, Benoit got his feet not only under the ropes, but on them. He had elevated his feet and literally shoved them into the rope, which shows that it wasn't just like bad placement on the pin. Like he physically got his feet to touch the ropes. Referee missed it. And of course, Eddie kind of says nothing in the origins of lying, cheating, and stealing. He's like, oh, well, my result. And just slips out. And Benoit's going like, what the fuck? There's a guy on the front row as well, bless him. I loved it. Like, there's a couple of people actually, but the second that the referee counts the three, he's just up and he's pointing and screaming. And you just see his hands and he's like just hurling abuse at this referee. And the poor fucking ref. It's just great.
It's great when they get involved so heavily.
It is. We're going to see some more involvement in the main event that's maybe not so great.
Crumbs. More on that in a bit, Your Honor. We go to the blue locker room. David Sullivan has his rabbit. He's got sat in front of everybody with a little rabbit.
Yeah, that poor animal.
Oh, gosh. Sting's pushing even louder for the Ric Flair match. And what?
Stop calling in and requesting Bill Goldberg. We have no idea who he is.
We don't know who you're talking about.
It's Vince from 2023. They've invented time frames. He's just taking the piss.
Sting is there. It's like he's really struggling to get people to... Like, he's really pushing the idea of having to face Flair. And he's saying, like, how, like, he's not a... You know, he'd never kill a man. But he's promising that if he faces Ric Flair tonight, he will leave him for dead. And then... As it's fading away, you hear the Nasty Boys. Well, I think it's Brian Knobs go, we'll do that to the Blue Bloods as well.
This is what I mean.
Good effort.
It's like, there's a lot of, I believe, you know, especially at this time, it's quite apparent. There's a lot of, you know, worrying about your spot.
Yes.
You know, the Nasty Boys were once a much, much, much bigger deal than they are here. And even now, they're still like, you know, now, like 1995, they're still a, you know, a pretty big deal, but they were once kind of a little bit more prominent. And now, you know, when you're kind of on the downslope a bit, it's like, oh, well, you know, why aren't I getting any featured time? And, you know, there's a lot more going on here than just this. And then it leads to everybody in the scene just kind of, as we saw with Duggan, just trying to get in and trying to be themselves and trying to be a character. And it's almost like the second they say go, just the silliness starts. Yeah. And it's like, right, I'm going to try and do this and I'm going to be as big and as intimidating as possible. And they're not trained to be quiet when they teach them promos at all. They're trained to be the opposite. So even like standing there silently has got to take some effort.
In
this era.
Like, you have to really give it some salt.
Because you've still got to look menacing. You can't just be like all chill, like normal posture. You've got to still be, you know, shaking and like taking in what the person cutting the promo is saying.
But hitting at the same your taunts time, and all that.
It's dialed into you and it's drilled into you, I imagine, that you just got to keep going until the out. So it's just talk, and then get your stuff in.
It's true. But it doesn't matter because for all their crying just near the end, the interactive match for Nitro is set, and it's Ric Flair versus Sting!
Oh, who could have seen that coming?
What a pointless gimmick this all was. We could have really had some fun with that idea, and I think in years to come we will.
Yes.
Hello Taboo Tuesday, hello Cyber Sunday. I'd like something like that again.
I want it to come back, yeah. I don't see why, like, now we have a better world than ever for it. The only problem is if it's a matchup they don't want. So they need a pool of talent, and they need to kind of expressly, without cutting it too fine, because, you know, kids still very much believe actively in kayfabe. You can't be kind of going, well, you know, it's non-canon because it has to have some level of interconnectivity with everything else. But at the same time, they'd need to have a pool of talent that anybody could face anybody
Yeah.
And they'd need a set of options where you've just got to kind of Twitter poll it and then done.
Well, it's like with Taboo Tuesday, I think that was the first one. And the first match we had was Chris Jericho versus what was chosen by the audience, Shelton Benjamin, for the IC title. Shelton won the title that night.
Yeah.
And like I remember reading somewhere that was a call made on the fly when Shelton won the poll.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Put the belt on Shelton. So we figure out a match, you guys, and put the belt on Shelton. I'd like to think that is true.
I'd like to as well.
Because they must have gone, well, there's enough love for Shelton Benjamin.
There's just, I'm so jaded by wrestling that I can never ever take these like fans choose the thing seriously. Because it's like, you know that they've got an optimal thing they want in mind.
Yeah, they're ready
to. You know they've paid 11,000 people to call up. You know that they've got their own phone satellite manipulating the and it just gets bigger and bigger until, you know, the entire moon is a satellite. And it's owned and operated by Titan Sports.
Do you remember when they had... it was Triple H, he's going to defend the title against either Jeff Hardy, Vladimir Kozlov, or Jeff Hardy and Vladimir Kozlov. And for weeks leading up to it, they were like, Vladimir just keeps beating up Triple H. Oh my God. Anyway, they voted for Triple H. They voted for Jeff Hardy and Vladimir. I think they voted for Jeff Hardy, and then Vladimir Kozlov got involved.
Of course.
And then the following month, they did Triple H versus Vladimir Kozlov. Anyway, look, you don't know what you want.
Have you seen?
I know what I want.
Have you seen Kozlov these days?
He looks like a GTA non-playable character.
Yeah, he does, but he's got his own vodka brand and everything. What it's a fucking crazy. If you've not seen him, go Google him now. Like, he's got, just search Vladimir Kozlov vodka and just look at it. Like, it's completely different person. It's like, what the fuck? Is that like 60-year-old Conor McGregor? Like, what the fuck's going on here?
Ric Flair versus Sting is our main event. You know what? Okay, we complain about the
It's Flair Sting.
It's Flair Sting.
Yeah, you can't exactly complain about it.
If they just said last week, Ric Flair and Sting are going to have a fight.
Yeah.
Fine.
You know, Sting. The interactivity is important, though, because they're live and you can't do that on a taped show, can you?
You could have done it in another way. I didn't know.
You'd need like 50-50 buttons if you were to do it with a live audience. They could do that as well.
Pick the stip. You could have done pick the stip.
We need like a new stip. Can we just say that now, just as an aside? We need, because the last new proper stip we had that's took hold was what, Money in the Bank? And even then, that's just a ladder match.
Yeah.
But,
that's,
you know,
true.
The concept itself is so fun that it works. But I don't even know, like, where do you take a stip now? Like, everything's been done. How do you make it bigger? Because it needs to be a spectacle.
It's got to be a spectacle, but it can't be hokey.
Yeah.
And it can't be convoluted.
Like, I wish they'd do more open air shows. I wish that WWE would just get to a bloody beach. I think it'd look awesome. Like, yeah, you'd be smaller crowd, but it'd feel special.
Well, they nearly did for SummerSlam 2020.
Yeah.
When all that was kicking off.
Because I know, like, you can't really exactly build bleachers on the beach. You're going to sink and stuff. But you could have a car park next to the beach that you convert, and you could still have it in all the wide shots or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm still thinking about a new stip.
A new stip. I've racked my brain for years about this. It's really hard. What do you do? Because everything cage-wise has been done. The Elimination Chamber is like the ultimate evolution of Hell in a Cell.
What if we put them in a bubble?
What if we surround the ring with a moat?
Yeah.
Of burning oil.
It feels like an inverted
match. But it's green flames.
Oh, okay. Feels like a green
flame. And RVD RVD and Matt Riddle get to crack some weed jokes.
Oh, so they're just like getting high during the match?
Oh, no, they're not in the match. They're just kind of on commentary.
Fair.
Now, I genuinely don't know. Like, how do you make something like that?
Because the thing is,
you know for a fact that in Titan Towers somewhere, there is a fucking safe or a book full of rejected stip ideas that we couldn't even dream of. But because it feels like very much a stip is something that just sort of goes slowly up the chain. You go, hey, what do you think of this? And it's really good. You should tell this person. And it just slowly climbs until eventually whoever presents it to Vince goes, it was my idea. And it eventually ends up becoming a thing. But if you take ladders out of it, if you take everything that you'd associate with a current stip out of it, what are you left with? You're left with a ring.
So there's a ring.
You can't use a cage. You can't use any ladders. You can't use any poles. Like, how do you, like, water's like one of the only things we haven't really done, but it's dangerous, like really dangerous, especially with all the electricals.
It's dangerous. And also, like, not massively, like,
there's no
shocking
threat to it. Yeah.
A choke slam into the water.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I choke slam my brother into the pool for years on holiday.
It's like,
no damage there.
How else do you do it? Like, we've obviously had stips that go by the wayside, like Buried Alive, but
they've taken the ropes down.
Like,
I know NXT UK did I think it was Eddie Dennis versus Trent Seven. They did a match where they took the turnbuckle pads off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know why, like, turnbuckle pads to me,
I'm just thinking what you take.
Yeah. They should mean a lot more, but I think because of the era we were watching as kids and like teenagers, they were just taken off in every match. So it was like, well, it hurts a bit more, but not loads. Even though it is just a massive metal ring and it would suck to get headbutted into it.
I think Al Snow was onto something when he took the steel cage and put it inside the Hell in a Cell.
I think, yeah.
The dog bit was bullshit.
But then that's just Punjabi prison.
Oh, yeah, they did that, didn't they?
With less steps.
With less steps.
I did find out the Punjabi prison match, like the cage is metal, I believe. And that,
but
like,
it's designed to look like bamboo.
That's fucking suck.
I think the door thing was, and this is like, I don't want there to be too many rules. Mm. The door thing was a bit shit.
Yeah.
Like, you got 60 seconds and the door shuts forever. Just get out. The table
have
of weapons.
Ever, have we ever
is
done
a bit...
gauntlet matches with lumberjacks? Like, so all of the opponents around the ring and kind of getting involved as it's going on?
Yeah, so like that. So everybody who's in the match is already around the ring.
Yeah, and then the second that match is done, they get the hell in.
I think...
Or they fight for the... But then it becomes very TNA reverse rumble, right? If they've all got to fight to get into the ring, and why are they knocking each other out when...
We had something like it. My brain is going, Monday Night Raw, 1999, in the run-up to St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and it was Austin running the corporate rumble.
Yeah.
And all the corporation were ringside. And one by one, they went into the ring. But as soon as Austin hit a stunner on them, the next entrant ran in and hit Steve Austin. So they got DQ'd.
Right.
And then the match, and that was, it was just like a series of DQs.
It's weird.
But it was shit. But I see what they were going for.
Yeah. It's something that my brain will just go to it. And it's like, how could you do a new gimmick? And every single thing I come up with, it's like, oh, but that's just, you know, it's a tables match, but with, you know, something different. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah. There's like nothing that I can come up with that's, and I'm not exactly the most creative person. I'm sure other people out there have got great ideas. And if you do, let us know, tweet us. But it's just one of those conundrums that's always plagued me.
What a loserweight championship match. Oh, that's been done, hasn't it?
Like we've
so like the weird all. Like yeah like the person who gets pinned becomes the loserweight.
It's
champion,
why I think we should go back to more spectacle based stuff, like doing stuff outside, doing stuff on the roof of Titan Towers, which we've been slowly, you know, doing. I think more of the kind of wrestling, but in a weirder setting, might hopefully breed some creativity towards a whole new gimmick.
Yeah, think on that. Send us your suggestions. Don't
do please.
No, do.
It keeps
fine.
Me up at night.
The match is good fun between Sting and Flair.
Yeah.
It wears off. As the match is going on, Bischoff informs us a special announcement is coming at the end of this broadcast. Mm. It doesn't say what, but we've got to keep people there.
They hype it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sting's punching Flair in the corner. The ref's trying to pull them apart. Sting picks up the ref and sits him on the top turnbuckle.
Yeah. And all the while, Heenan's saying that Hogan's retiring. That's what the announcement's going to be. This is going to be great. It's about time. And it's so good.
It's quite the thing. And then basically, Ric Flair uses brass knucks behind the ref's back, gets a two. Sting fights back. Scorpion deathlock on, but refuses to release the deathlock. Yeah. Refuses to release it. Mr. JL, Eddie Guerrero, Duggan, and Dave Sullivan all charge to the ring to get Sting to release.
Come on, Stinger. Come on, Stinger. Come on. Come on, Stinger.
Basically,
come on. Come on, Stinger.
As Eric Bischoff is saying, Lex Luger's
come
out
on,
here. And Luger's like, and they're like, well, he's been stopped by security.
Come on, Stinger. Let go of it. Come on.
And eventually he does. Eventually he's coaxed to come away, but then gets halfway down the ramp, sees that Luger is still just getting into position, runs back into the ring, puts the Scorpion Deathlock on Flair again, and then Luger comes out, says some calming words to Sting.
That aren't. Come on, Stinger.
Yeah.
Come on. He just leans right into his face like this, and they just talk, and you don't hear anything of what's being said because everybody else is going, come on, Stinger. Come on, Stinger. Let go of him. Come on now, Stinger. Come on. It's a bit much.
But whatever he says, he is very much the Sting Whisperer.
Yeah, and Sting lets go.
And he and Sting and Luger leave together.
Yeah, and commentary are like, oh, what?
What did
Sting and Luger? What's this?
Friends like normal.
Oh, my God.
From the Observer, Lex Luger missed his cue to come out.
Fucking hell, Lex. He's, I know I'll get heat for this. He is so shit. He's like, he's on another planet.
But
all the time.
It's not, how the fuck do you miss a cue to come out? Why? Isn't there somebody by Gorilla? Like, you see it all the time. Maybe this is why WCW died. They just didn't have a guy by Gorilla. But you see, when you do the new WWE 24 documentaries, that even when you look back at, like, Wrestling with Shadows and shit, there's always somebody right by the curtain.
Yeah.
And the people who are ready to go are ready to go. Like when, the screw job. Everybody's in place waiting by the curtain because there was going to be a run-in from Brett's allies.
They knew this was all coming.
Yeah, and so, you go and you wait. So unless Luger's been sat in his dressing room or he's quickly popped out for a smoke or something, like, what?
I just feel like he's not on the planet. I just don't feel like he's as mentally invested as everybody
he
else.
He saw himself in the mirror and just started flexing. Yeah. And they're like, Lex.
What are you doing? Oh, I've got to run in, but not until Sting's got the deathlock on.
He's got the fucking deathlock on. He's had it on for 10 minutes.
It's not the deathlock, it's a sharpshooter. Like, just go! Fucking idiot!
Fine.
Bischoff.
Throws the curtain.
Bischoff chewed everybody out after this. Bischoff was furious.
I can imagine.
Heenan did well to cover it.
Yeah.
But like, this was a big angle that they, and it meant that obviously Nitro is so timed to the letter that
that's all we got time for this week.
That's where
we get Black.
That's where that come from. So therefore, but thankfully we were there, managed to get back on time. Luger and Sting, are they in cahoots? Well, they're mates. They always have been. That's not a surprise to anybody. We come to our main event.
Hold on. We got to just quickly talk about after Ric Flair uses the brass knucks. I don't know if you noticed, but the stuff being thrown into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's what looks like a couple of coins. Which it isn't Mexico. So, in Mexico, traditionally, some people throw coins after a good match.
Yes.
Underhandedly throw coins, not like pelting them.
they just kind of
just gently toss the coin into the ring as like a very well done type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the match was worth more than the cost of admission. Have some money. So you have that, but these coins are very much just going and landing. And then it looked like somebody throws a fucking pen.
What?
It's before the end. Like, I think it's when Flair's kind of hit him. I think he goes to lock in the sharpshooter again, and somebody throws a pen. Or it looks like a pen. It bounces off him, and it's just kind of there. And then they both get up, and the referee has to very quickly clear it out the way. But I was like, what the fuck's that?
Oh.
And it, like, rolled. I was like, is that a pen? Somebody on the front row's just gone, eh. Like, reached around in their little bag, or, like, their like, work pocket. Just like, eh.
Just anything, just a flair for being a naughty boy. Eat my biro.
WCW crowds were known for throwing garbage in the ring, and it's one thing to throw, an empty Coke cup made of, polystyrene, because it won't go far anyway, and even if it's got a little liquid in it, it's going to pretty much explode on impact and it's not going to hurt. But coins? Fucking hell, is it Jacksonville? Holy shit. Wait, wasn't Jacksonville where Limp Bizkit are from? Maybe this crowd's just really angry.
He hasn't even been born yet into the music world. I'm sure Fred Durst is alive.
$3 bill will have happened by this point.
Oh, by 95?
Would be about to happen.
Oh.
Is it 95, 96?
No wonder they're cross. So for our final...
We've been listening to Nookie for fucking 2 years. Fucking take this shit. Get out of here.
Stick it up your yes.
Fucking Faith. Stop it.
The Giant, the Taskmaster, and Jimmy Hart are out to make our special announcement to end the show. Jimmy Hart reveals that he had the power of attorney
over
on Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan. He says,
Hulk Hogan.
He goes, Hulk Hogan. And then he makes a jibe about Hogan's Hollywood sting.
I thought he'd get a right roasting for this.
Because he was like, when you were out in Hollywood, making all those crappy movies that end up in VHS, like video rental stores. And he just kind of keeps just poking little jabs, and it's like, keep going, Jimmy, keep going. How long you been sat on this anger for, Jimmy? Tell us how you really feel, mate.
Yeah, this is Jimmy getting a little bit of the bile out of his system, and I applaud it.
I imagine, it must build up like lactic acid in your knee right now. It must build up with sustained time around. The Hulkster.
Your film's kinda, great, Hulk.
Instead of just bottling it up, there's a whole bottling operation and a brewery going on. And many little workers just really shelving every last one with a little tag. This is the time that he made a fool out of me in the restaurant. This is the time he called me short.
saves it all.
Yeah. This is the time he sat on my bastard megaphone and broke it.
As he pours his lactic acid, Hart says that he has power of attorney, so he signs all of Hogan's contracts while he's off gallivanting. Hart signed the contract that's for the world title match at Halloween Havoc that said if Hogan got DQ'd, he would lose the title, meaning that the Giant is indeed the reigning WCW World Heavyweight Champion.
But hang on a second.
What? Let's bring out everyone's favorite top babyface in WCW. Practicing attorney, Nick Lambros.
That's it. Nick Lambros, right out there.
Not Nick Botwinkle.
No.
Not an authority figure.
He's got news from Botwinkle. Calm down.
He has, but you know. I guess we couldn't have had Botwinkle because he tends to go on a bit. Nick Lambros says that whilst Hart did have Hogan's power of attorney, Giant is not the world champion. Dun, dun, dun. Nick Botwinkle confirms that WCW World title, as a result of shenanigans from Jimmy Hart, is vacated and will be awarded to the winner of the World War III Battle Royal.
And here's where we get an interesting thing. So, well, a couple of things. Like, Botwinkle expressly said it was too dubious and Jimmy Hart wasn't getting away with something like that. So WCW's, like, looking out for its talent and all this shit. But there's just a kid and his dad sat behind Jimmy Hart this entire promo, and he's just sick of his life. He's just like, and his dad's just next to him like, are you for real? Just like watching this all unfold. People are getting up on their feet and they're just like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. This is terrible.
You need to see Hogan.
But also, I don't know if this is the first time, but you get Kevin Sullivan saying the line, it's a 60-man battle royal, the biggest event ever. Do you think anybody can beat the Giant? And that, in a way, is kind of the first off, how are they going to eliminate this guy? Look at the size of him for Paul White, which would go on to be a staple, as we know, of his entire career.
Oh,
how are they going to eliminate him? He's huge. But of course, it had been done before, but it was just interesting. I was like, oh, is this the first time it was ever kind of uttered? About him?
I think that was it. That was Taskmaster's confidence in him surviving the Battle Royal. It is the first time someone said, no one's going to chuck him out, you dickhead.
Like, how are you going to beat him?
Because the one thing they hype in these commercials for World War III,
they're very good at hyping it. Like, WCW are very good at hyping to their pay-per-view stuff.
But then the pay-per-views happen.
Yeah, but then the pay-per-views happen. They're good at, they're like snake oil salesmen. You know?
Nice. That's brilliant.
Like, we have the wrestling to cure your ills.
Brilliant.
Come down, they set up their little stand. You come along to Nitro, which is their stand, and they're like, oh my God, I'm going to go home. I'm going to fucking call my pay-per-view provider. I'm going to tell them that I want this pay-per-view. And then you watch it and you're like, what? That hasn't cured my ills. It's made them worse.
WCW promoters are like snake oil salesmen. That's amazing. And you're right, because that's what this is. Fucking snake oil. They're hyping it up as like a giant in every ring.
Yeah.
And we know the Giant is one of the Giants. We know that the Yeti is going to be one of the Giants. Mm-hmm. There is a third Giant they're trying to acquire.
Is it Zeus?
I know Zeus was in the conversation.
Yeah.
But nothing was happening with that at the moment. They were still hoping that Giant Gonzalez might change his mind and they could use him as the third Giant. That's not happening either.
Okay.
It's looking like they're just going to go, the third Giant is Hulk Hogan. Because fuck off.
They could have at least made it tenter. Given him some lift.
Yeah.
Given him, like, you know, a 3-foot lift and he can be taller than everybody.
I think at this point as well,
Maybe just have him on wires, just kind of floating above everybody with fake legs. And as long as he doesn't get knocked over, then you'll not be able to tell that these legs are just made of fabric.
That'd be a great...
Tenter's looking tall this week, isn't it?
What a great image. But that, I believe, not Tenter, I believe at this point they'd also started having conversations with Giant Haystacks.
Yeah.
That would lead to the briefest of runs.
Yeah, we're going to have Loch Ness make his debut before long. And
I can't wait.
What could have been, but at the same time, a startling display of how far wrestling had come as a form of entertainment on both sides of the pond, right? Because World of Sport was a very huge deal and it focused heavily on work rate and athletic style, you know, realistic presentations of catch wrestling, catch as catch can. And like, you know, it was very back and forth. It was very dynamic. It was very reversal heavy. It's the kind of thing you see Zack Sabre Jr. doing. But it also had this element of, you know, just ridiculous energy, things like Big Daddy. It's like, the guy can't fucking wrestle, save his life, really. But like, you know, you put him in there with any kind of younger worker or one of the more like intense, you know, catch guys, they'd run rings around him. But the fact he was just so big, and the fact that he was so easy to support, and everybody was on his side, and that was kind of what Haystacks was, part of that side of World of Sport. And yeah, our side of it, when it's taken out of its bubble, I mean, it's already quite hokey, but wrestling as a whole is hokey, but it doesn't quite mash well into the American hokiness.
And it's, I think, a different that's
when,
kind of
I
hokey.
Think that's when British wrestling really got a little bit of a, not that it was like, you know, a watershed moment or anything, but I think it's like a big example of how far removed our two worlds were at that point, because we were all obsessed with American wrestling by this point over in the UK. And our indie scene wasn't exactly doing very well. And, you know,
no, like, our indie scene is trash.
We entered like a very long dark age, and then there'd be small little kind of ooh, ooh, ooh. And then we entered another dark age, and then ooh. And then we got the indie boom started to come through. And even then, there were, you know, just dark days, and it would kind of bubble and bubble, and now we've got WWE owning it. So like we've always had a bit of a weird disconnect there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's we're going to see giant haystacks in a proper American off of the America wrestling.
Doing that thing with Gene Oakland going, I'm coming for you, Hulk Hogan!
I still don't know why they fucking called him Loch Ness.
I can't wait to get into that.
The Americans just wouldn't know what a Scottish person sounds like.
All the same country.
Oh my
England's
God.
All the same country.
I mean,
but then you know what? We're just as bad, because we'll go, "Hi, I'm from America," and it's like there's so many different.
That's
iterations.
How they all sound. What?
I'm from America.
Yeehaw!
Cowboys and guns.
That's what everybody in Maine sounds like. They got their wineries. Yeehaw!
Got me wine. So WWE World Title is handed over to top babyface Nick. Top babyface Nick Ambrose leaves with the WWE World Championship. Next week, Savage versus Meng, Guerrero versus Johnny B. Badd, and Sting versus Dean Malenko.
Nice. I'm looking forward to Johnny B. Badd versus, who was it again? Guerrero.
Guerrero.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Some good wrestling next week, and Savage and Meng.
Shame there was barely any this week.
There was none this week.
Well, that's WCW for you.
Apart from Guerrero Benoit, they had a lovely time.
Yeah.
Yeah, thoughts on this week's show?
It was all right. You know, it's very much, we've said it quite a lot so far. We're only 10 episodes into Nitro, so it's still very much finding its feet. It's starting to get the idea of itself, though. It's getting its rhythm down, you know. I mean, admittedly, this show was a bit of a clusterfuck. Like, I'd be pissed off if I was in the audience and the show starts and it's just segment, 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 like pre-tapes. Yeah. And then, boom, there's your match. And it's like, okay, it takes a while to get into it. And, you know, as we know with wrestling now, I mean, Christ, how long ago was it we were saying this about WWE? It's like, why is Raw going to start with a 20-minute segment every week?
Mm-hmm.
It needs that variety, but it also needs to have a strong start. So if you're going to start with segments, you better hope they're in the fucking ring.
Yeah.
And you better hope that people can interact with it, because unless it's like a really, really good pre-tape, especially at this time when people are paying really hard-earned money to pay to see live wrestling, and they're maybe getting a few matches for TV and a couple of dark matches, it's a bit, yeah. And yeah.
We'll see how it finds its feet as we continue our journey on towards World War III. On the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review, until we're back together again. I can't call you Less Defined anymore, because since we last did it, you've changed it.
I am the Sam Driver now. Ah. I just wanted to try and get my name in there, but I couldn't get my name. So I decided it was time to change it, but I'm keeping my old handle because I'm going to start doing some like weird video stuff just for fun.
There you go.
Yeah.
But until then, you can find him at the Sam Driver on Twitter. I'm at Tom Gamble on Twitter. We are at Cultaholic on Twitter.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.